Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to All of It. I'm Jenna Flanagan, filling in for Allison Stewart today. So thanks for joining us. The beginning of the new Mexican horror film, Tigers Are Not Afraid, chronicles an experience that is unfortunately all too real for many Mexican children. A young girl, Estrella, comes home from school one day to find that her mother is missing. After waiting around, hungry and lonely, Estrella comes to realize that her mom has been taken by the local drug cartel and is likely dead. She joins up with a group of street kids who have similarly been orphaned by the drug wars. Together, they roam the streets in search of food, shelter, and safety. But this is where the film takes a turn for the fantastical, because Estrella isn't just any other kid. She has these magical wishes given to her by a teacher during a shooting at school. And though her first wish is to bring her mom home, Estrella quickly learns that, just like in fairy tales, wishes can have unintended consequences. A moving and disturbing portrait of how Mexico's drug wars are impacting a generation of the country's children, Tigers Are Not Afraid was written and directed by Mexican director Isa Lopez. The film is opening in New York, Los Angeles, and Toronto on August 23rd, and Isa Lopez is with us now. Isa, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. So happy to be here.
This is such a beautiful, of course, yet dark film. It's a horror piece, of course, but I'm wondering, what was it that made you decide to focus on the children in discussing or exploring the narrative of the drug cartels in Mexico?
Well, I did it precisely because nobody is talking about them. And like any war, when adults disappear, when they vanish, when they're killed, there's kids that are left on the sides of the conflict. And even though we call it the drug war, I don't think we fully grasp the concept that it is war. And there's casualties and there's children affected, deeply affected by it. So I was researching for a different project related to the cartels. And there was a side comment about how it's affecting the children. And it made me think for the first time about it. And I realized that I hadn't thought about it because it's not in the media. Everybody's fascinated with the figure of the drug lord and the cartels. And it's been even glamorized. And nobody was talking about the children. So I decided to start thinking about the story that dealt with that situation.
Now, of course, in addition to the children, this film also puts the narrative of violence against women at its forefront. And I'm wondering why you wanted specifically for that to be so clear in the film.
Because it's absolutely inherent to Latin American culture. The gender violence, and I think we need to address it. What surprised me enormously is that it is, of course, not particular to Latin American culture. One of the first places where I show the movie is Canada. Gender violence happens around the world, of course. But murders and disappearances and vanishings in massive numbers are happening, for example, in Canada. And I was against Native women, and I was not aware of it. What is interesting is when you make a movie that touches on a subject matter like this, you realize that these problems are way more universal than what you expect at the beginning. That the more particular and specific the problem is to a culture, the more universal it turns out to be.
Well, considering that the film's main protagonist, her mom is taken by the drug cartel, is that a common occurrence? Do they go after women? And why is it, if that's one of the tactics that they use, why do they do that?
Well, there is sadly and horribly a value to you know, trade with women and human trafficking. And women are incredibly vulnerable. And many times they're migrants and they're workers and they're fending for themselves. And they're in a border town sometimes in hopes of crossing. And easy targets. And again, gender violence, you know, there's this incredible anger towards women that I was very exposed when researching for the movie and looking for the visual cues to portray this violence. you see the photographs of the crime scenes, and or they're you know in cartel violence, all their murders. Of course, they're violent naturally, but there's a rage when it's gender pointed that it's completely inescapable and very shocking. And it makes you question a lot of things about the mechanics of the of gender politics and the world, not only in Latin America, definitely.
Well, and again, you explore these concepts so beautifully in the film. And so when we see the little girl, Estrella, am I pronouncing her name correctly?
You are okay. Actually doing it very, very well.
Thank you. But when we see her left alone in the house and she does find these other street kids, it's also a group of boys that mm-hmm. she ends up joining. And even within, even though they're all orphan children and they're all struggling with this abandonment in this violent situation, there's still a level of sexism amongst the kids.
Yes, and there is two layers to it. The first one is it's not a smart thing to hang out around girls.
And they say that, yeah.
They say that. They phrase it that it's unlucky to hang out with girls, which is a very boy thing to say. But it is, because girls are targets for criminal activity. So there is that very real level. And then there is the next level, which is the boys' club. And that, you know, when their children is kind of even cute, good to look like, but if unattended and not addressed, it becomes gender bias and gender violence and sexism. So
it was very interesting. And again, I'm not sure if this was intended or my reading into it, but it was almost as if with some of the anger issues that you see some of the little boys in mm-hmm. this film struggling with, you could almost see how if that doesn't get addressed when they're children, how they could morph into some of these cartel members who commit these horrific acts of violence.
Completely. In my earlier drafts, you could see another group of boys a little older starting to lean towards crime. And that's what happens with these children left to their own devices, is they either become perfect targets and victims, or they're recruited. And they, you know, when you need to survive, you will do anything. And again, this happens, of course, in cartel violence affected places, but it will happen in war zones, in where children are recruited to become soldiers, and they eventually become the very same people who inflicts violence on the next generation of children. And the circle needs to be broken at some point.
Staying focused on the narrative of your film, I also thought it was so beautiful, and it sort of reminded me a little bit, this might sound glib, but of the filmmaker Guillermo del Toro.
Yes.
Because there's a fantastical aspect to parts of it, and there's even in this gritty situation where there's violence and death and so much uncertainty of even how you're going to survive, these kids are still kids, and there's these scenes where their imagination is allowed to fly or to flourish, and you're reminded of the innocence that they still have.
Yeah, that is the interesting balance, that you can see how they're still children and how beautiful the spirit of innocence is in them and their imaginations and the beauty they carry with them and the humor and the kindness. And but you can also glimpse how it's going to be lost and damaged if they're, you know, left alone. And that is kind of the point of the movie. And the influence of Del Toro was very clear, because I think he's a master of mixing extremely real violence and horror with lyricism and poetry and imagination and fantasy, like nobody's business. The constant combination of the sublime and the horrible is his specialty. And it's something that from the very beginning of his career became an influence on me. And even though the movie deals with gender violence and crime and all of that, it is also kind of a poem. And it's about the mix of those two and how in the middle of that, human spirit can survive.
And is that part of the reason why you wanted to sort of frame the story, not just as a horror story, but also as a bit of a fairy tale?
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, there's wishes, there's these sort of magical moments. I don't want to give too much away, but was that intentional?
Completely. I think that the the vice of the fairy tale in our minds has always been a means to try to decode the world that is very menacing. And we did it tribally, and now it's mostly restricted to children, but it's in our makeup. It's in who we are and how we understand the world and good versus evil. We understand it at the very beginning of our lives through fairy tales. So these kids are trying to navigate the world through the rules of fairy tales.
So it's sort of like a bit of a revenge fantasy at some points in the film.
It is. There is, tremendous violence has been inflicted on them. And one of my main characters, Estrella, is running away from danger. And the male lead, Shine, is trying to go back to danger and face it. And both of them are in deep trouble because it doesn't matter how fast she runs, danger is still going to be walking right by her. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how hard he tries to be the bad guy, he's still a child, you know, and beautifully, he's not a criminal. And even though he tries to become the warrior and the tiger, he's not there. So they're both struggling between what they need to achieve and reality.
Again, when you were just talking about the way that the characters are depicted, they were so beautifully portrayed by the child actors. And I'm wondering, how did you find kids who were able to capture something so raw and so gritty? And I mean, there's parts of the film that are really rough.
Yes.
How were you able to cast these young children?
Well, we saw 600. Not me personally, my casting team saw 600 children. I personally saw 200, which is quite a feat. And then we cut it down to 100 and to 50 and to 20 and the final five. And I was looking for, not for a look, not for a face, not for a color or a shape. What I was looking for was a certain type of energy in each of them. Each of them is a little bit of an archetype. And I was looking for that energy. And through that raw emotion that I found in each one of them, I was able to not go through the usual techniques mm-hmm. of performance, but to tap into, let them just open up to the emotions that they carried, which is a trick on itself. But then, of course, what you realize is if you're going to do that, you're also responsible from bringing them out of those emotions and help them be able to go into them when you say action mm-hmm. and to stop them, because they're pretty dark, powerful emotions yeah. when you say cut. Because otherwise you're going to scar children for life, you know, and you don't want to do that. You want them to remember this like a fun experience. So I was nervous along the way. You know, it's a big responsibility. But in the end, they were beautiful. They had a really good time. We still get together from time to time. They absolutely beat me every time we try to play video games together. They're really, really good.
So they're still very much kids at heart, but I feel like that's one of the themes in the film. I do want to talk a little bit about your research before creating this film. And one of them was, like you were saying, we know so very little about the children who were sort of left behind from these drug wars. What was it that you were able to find out about? How many of them are there? What situations are they in? And is there anything being done to address the problem?
Well, there's no numbers. You know, one of the biggest issues that I'm sure it's happening across Latin America, but certainly in Mexico, is that there's no numbers for the actual people who have vanished. There's no numbers for the actual killings. We keep finding mass graves with people that have no name. And then, of course, as a result, there's no numbers for the children. And there's not one specialized organism trying to take care of them. The political crisis is and the justice crisis and the economical crisis is so beyond repair right now, like immediate repair. It's going to be fixed, and I believe it's in the hands of that generation, by the way. But it's so big and massive that small, quote unquote, because mm-hmm. it is not a small, aspects of it, like the children that are left on the side, many, many times are unattended, which is why I wanted to make the movie, and which I think it's particularly relevant right now, because we are in the U.S. seeing Latin American children, Central American, Mexican children that are in detention camps, in basically cages in many cases, across the border. And the movie deals with the reasons that they would risk crossing, that their parents would risk taking their kids in such a journey, is because they're escaping fates like the ones my characters are facing in the movie.
Which definitely adds another layer, I think, of emotional drama. At least it was for me watching it. While it is a tough movie to watch, there are some moments of levity and joy, and I'm wondering if you could just leave us with one of those.
Yes, because we painted, 50% of the movie is about darkness, and 50% of the movie is about light, and about hope, and about fantasy. It was. I'm asked frequently, "How did I manage the moments of comedy in the movie?" And it's less about managing than letting children be children. And one thing you learn is that even through the darkest journey, they will play and they will laugh and they will find joy and they will make toys out of anything. And that happens in the movie, and they're lovely. And the reason that you care for them is because you laugh with them. And it is a little bit of an adventure, you know? It's a little bit of a dark version of Peter Pan with Wendy and Peter and the Lost Boys trying to survive this very particular version of Neverland.
Would you say this is a hopeful film?
I completely believe that. That was my intention, and I do believe audiences walk out of there feeling that. It is it's a grim journey, and the adventure goes through, you know, tough times for the characters. But it was very important for me to create a story where, at the end, you don't feel that there's no hope and nothing to do. That you walk out of there feeling that there is a way out and there's light. But the only way to achieve it is by standing up and doing something.
So a hopeful film, although wiping away tears. You will be wiping away tears.
I know.
What's next on the horizon for you?
Well, as you were saying, you know, Guillermo del Toro was a huge influence when even writing the script and then making the movie. And even when I was writing the script, I was thinking, oh, you know, who would like this script is Guillermo del Toro. There was no way for me to get across to him. But then when the movie opened and it got a beautiful reception in the genre circuit of the festivals, the comparison started, because there is a lot of common ground between his view of the world and mine. And he got interested and loved the movie and became a huge champion of it. And eventually, you know, I contacted him and he said, let's work together. So he is producing my next movie. I am writing and directing, he's producing, and it is a supernatural Western. And it will lead with, you know, monsters and fun and legends and lore. There's werewolves in it.
Oh.
There's also a political side to it, because we are who we are, aren't we?
All right. Well, thank you so much. I've been speaking with director Issa Lopez about her new film, Tigers Are Not Afraid. Issa, thank you so much for joining us
My
on
pleasure.
All of It. Coming up, directors Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman talk about their new documentary, Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice. More after the break. Stay tuned.